Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Or illegal, the ones if you actually took a company's name and registered it.
But,
like, as,
but this guy had just as much right to it as anybody else because he had a registered Australian orthopedic business.
Australian orthopedic would, line or,
Yeah.
Hey, I hate to break in on this fund, but guys, we've done it to another hour.
Oh, okay.
And the next I'll get a nasty note from Ben telling me to, you know, hit my marks. Because we mess with his timers when we run over, which we just did by 30 seconds. So we'll see you on the other side, John.
This year's coming.
Peter, thanks, brother.
See you back Monday.
Yeah. Happy Independence Day.
Thank you.
And so here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11, and
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Oh, all right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network for, a Thursday night or Friday morning or Friday afternoon, all depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it is. And it's actually already the 4th of July here, so maybe I'm the one host that'll do a 4th of July show? I don't know. All depends on... where he is. Oh, what a week it's been, And if I seem a little lost tonight, there's a good reason. I was up at 4 a.m. starting work this morning. And I'm kind of running on fumes at the moment, but it should be all good. You know that point where you kind of get tired enough where that kind of slightly hyper second wind kicks in. That's where I'm at the moment. My studio is far too small for my artificial energy source at the moment, whatever that is. But anyway, I think it's all just been coffee all day. But being that it's Thursday night and we're getting back to this, we missed this somehow, and this one's been hanging around for a little while. I'm very sorry, Billy Shears. We have a Billy Shears music tonight, and this should be really, really good. And this is, again, going to be one of those ones that's going to be a surprise for me because I never actually got to hear this one. During all that moving server stuff, I think it missed my email box, but thankfully, this home studio got it, and we'll do that here in a minute. And I have to remind everybody that Saturday night, you have to tune in to Night Sounds because it is Billy Shears' one-year anniversary. There will probably be some cameo appearances. I can tell you that there's a cameo appearance from myself, and that should be a little bit of good fun, and should be a great show. And I guess that's all I got to say about that. That's Saturday night, 9 to midnight. It's just been kind of chaos here. In Sydney and here in Australia, it's been a bit of a crazy week. Between all this hubbub about World Youth Day and these draconian laws that I've been keeping the guys posted about in the horn section, but there is some environmental stuff going on. Now, at the moment, we have this new government down here in Australia that I still think they're going to turn out to be a damn good, damn fine government, but at the moment they're suffering a little bit of the old too much committee thing, not enough action, please. But I also think some people are just wanting things to happen so fast that they're not being realistic. I mean, the guys, these folks have only been in government for 6 months, so there's lots to do. And this morning they released policy for an environmental issue. By the end of the year, there's actually going to be, we're supposed to get the whole plan, like the whole thing, the carbon cap and possibly trade system, carbon taxes, new support for renewables, all that kind of thing. So we're waiting for all that to come down. But at the moment, the federal government's been getting together with all the states because we have this river system here, the Murray Darling, and it's the Mississippi River of the Australian continent, and it's hurting something bad. It's like on the verge of collapse. It's that bad, and the previous government tried to work a deal with the states to get federal control over the water system and irrigation to try and work out all the differences between the states, but they had a privatization angle in their plan. And so it was fought, hammer and tong, and the states just told the last government, go screw yourself. We don't have problems with getting central control over the entire system that runs through, many states, starts in Queensland and ends up in South Australia. And so this new government actually had what they call a COAG meeting, which is the federal government getting together with all the top members of the state governments, and they knocked out this, what sounds like the biggest moves ever to try and undo some of the damage to the Murray Darling. And Kevin Rudd, our new prime minister, was on television last night, and I think he's getting the vibe that people are wanting to see a little bit more substance happening. And he was on last night really firing on all cylinders, saying, hey, this system's been in trouble for decades. And, the last government had 11 years to actually do something, and they never actually did anything. And so, we got to start somewhere. And it might not be salvageable. Some environmentalist groups reckon that the Murray Darling's already dead. And that could be a real problem. I mean, this is the waterway that feeds virtually all our agriculture, everything except for Western Australia. So kind of waiting for the analysis to come down. I haven't had time to read the whole policy statement myself, but hopefully this will be some serious, real effort to try and make some changes. And they're doing things like buying back irrigation licenses from farmers, and lots of work on trying to stop waste and no more open. Wide open irrigation flows that just evaporate, and trying to just pull back on the waste. Because, I mean, in a country like this, water is it is gold here, especially after 7 years of drought. But anyway, we got to get to this Billy Shears music thing. Now, I just got to check with Bob because I didn't actually get the file myself. Is this Dylan on Lennon or Lennon on Dylan, Bob? Lennon on Dylan. I had assumed it was the other way around. Just know Mr. Billy Shears. But this should be really great. I bet this has got some of that classic footage that he'd have to shoot us if we ever found out where he got it. So I'm very sorry, Billy, that it took so long to get to this. It's just, these things happen, but I imagine that this is going to be just fantastic. So here we go, folks. Billy Shears, our good friend, our host of Night Sounds, with Lennon on Dylan. Roll it, Bob.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lennon on Dylan. We're going to spend the next several weeks focusing on the professional and personal relationship between two of the most influential songwriters of the rock era, John Lennon and Bob Dylan. Here's Lennon biographer Ray Coleman.
Alongside Bob Dylan, I can't think of anyone intellectually to compare with John. That's not to say he was so well-read and so literary as Dylan. I mean, Dylan is just a magnificent genius poet. I don't think John had that grasp on words, but what John had and what Dylan has not, and I'm a great Dylan fan as it happens, John had the power to communicate with millions. Now, Dylan has a power to do it, but not with millions.
Love, love me do. You know.
Love me do, oh, love me do.
Love, love me do. You know I love you. I'll always be true. So please,
love me.
On September 4th, 1962, John and the Beatles began their first recording session at EMI Studios in London, with George Martin producing. They recorded version 1 of Love Me Do, the one with Ringo on drums. And just 2 months earlier, July 9th, 1962, a 21-year-old from the mining country of Minnesota walked into a New York City recording studio to cut this track for his second LP, The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Isn't how many...
Blowin' in the Wind and its composer, Bob Dylan, have been with us for more than 40 years now. It's a deceptively simple tune created by a remarkably complex man. John Lennon first heard Dylan's music during the visit to Paris in 1963, as he later told Tom Donahue on San Francisco's KASN FM.
I think that was the first time I ever heard him at all. And I think Paul got the record from a French DJ. We were doing a radio thing there, and the guy had the record in the studio. And Paul said, I keep hearing about this guy. Or he'd heard it, I'm not sure. And we took it back to the hotel and
fell in love like.
Mm-hmm. Here's a Dylan song that you wanted to play.
Oh, yeah, Carina, Carina. This is one of the early Dylan records I got turned on to. And I like this one, you know. And he didn't write it or nothing. And when I met him, I said, I like Carina, Carina, you know, it's nice backing. And he looked at me like, surprise, you know, backing. Yeah, the backing is great. So let's hear it.
Carina, Carina, yeah, we've been so long. Carina, Carina, yeah, we've been so long. I've been worried about you, baby. Baby, please come home. I got a bird that whistles. I got a bird that sings. I got a bird that whistles. I got a bird that sings. But I ain't got Carina. Life don't mean things. Carina, Carina, girl, you're on my mind. Carina, Carina, girl, you're on my mind. I'm sitting down thinking of you. I just can't keep from crying.
As John noted, Carina Carina was not a Dylan original. In fact, it was the only non-original song on the album that John and Paul heard. Free Willin's now considered an all-time classic LP featuring songs like Blowin' in the Wind, Girl from the North Country, Masters of War, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, and This Apocalyptic Vision set the music.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of 12 dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain's gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw highway diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. So room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard, it's a hard rain. They're gonna fall.
The music, its message, and Dylan's impassioned delivery left a deep impression on Lennon. Join us next week for part two of Lennon on Dylan. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
You're amazing, Billy Shears. And that's just part one. That's fantastic. Oh, just amazing. Where do you get this stuff? I really don't want to know. I'm just glad I'm the beneficiary. Fantastic. Fantastic. So tune in next week. We'll have part two, I reckon. And like I said, don't forget Billy Shears' anniversary show on Saturday. It should be a good romp. It should be a good party. You got to come and get in the chat room and dance with your emoticons. Anyway, you know, while we were listening to that, Ted Kennedy came up in the chat room. Not himself, but the subject of the man. And it reminded me that I was unbelievably pleased to read today that he's out of hospital and back working and fighting already. I mean, is the guy a legend or not? He's already back at work organizing national health care for the campaign. I love it. You know, having grown up in an extremely right-wing household, you know, I was fed all that, you know, the Kennedys were just a bunch of communist crap. And so, you know, after I had my enlightenment, I have such respect for that family. You know, they've had such unbelievable tragedy through the decades. But, you know, we have dynasties on the right, which is unfortunate, and we have dynasties on the left, which can be unfortunate as well. But you have to stand somewhat in awe of a family that has fought for real people more often than not throughout their varied careers. And so I'm so glad that the Lion is back and he's fighting and he's you know, he looks like he's coming back strong, and I wish him the best of luck. Just a great man, one of the few that we've got left. And you know, the day that he leaves active government, it's going to be a sad day, I think. But what a history to look back on. You know, not to say that he hasn't had his issues, hasn't had his problems, but he's never given up and he's always fought. And that's what you have to appreciate. Now, before we got into Billy's brilliant segment there, I was speaking about that we're expecting over the next few months some actual real, with teeth, environmental policy down here in Australia. Well, unfortunately, I have to report on the exact opposite, which, as you'd probably be able to guess, the United States, from the Huffington Post and also many other places, G8 climate scorecard puts U.S. in last place. You know, Bush just, you know, a couple months ago was sitting there talking about how, you know, America was doing its part to help stop global warming and that we were leading the world. Once again, Mr. Bush, you are so full of crap. The whites of your eyes are brown. Anyway, the article states, and I really hope that this is going to change, because if the U.S. doesn't start leading the way, we've got real problems. So as it stands right now, we've got real problems. Out of Berlin, the U.S. has done the least among the world's eight largest economies to address global warming, a study released Thursday found. G8 Climate Scorecards 2008 released Thursday ahead of next week's gathering of the Group of Eight on the northern Japanese island of Hokkaido also found that none of the eight countries are making improvements large enough to prevent temperature increases that scientists think would cause catastrophic climate changes. The gathering included the heads of state of the U.S., Japan, Britain, Germany, France, Italy, Canada, and Russia. Regine Günther, director of the World Wildlife Fund Climate Change Program in Germany, told reporters in the German capital that the G8 leaders should commit to reducing emissions in their countries 40% by 2020 and 80% by 2050. It's pretty good numbers. If we don't achieve that, the world's climate will change in ways that we can't even imagine today. The scorecard ranked Britain as the developed nation that has done the most to reduce carbon dioxide emissions and reach targets set by the Kyoto Protocol. France and Germany are close behind. Germany was praised for its investment in renewable energy. Now, the Germans have now made themselves number one in the world for solar power. And this is a nation that in wintertime actually has not all that much sunlight in the north. But the German government saw the benefits, and they came up with huge subsidies for farmers to set up sun farms. And it's working. And yes, prices for power have increased.
Hey, did I scare you?
The German people... The hell was that? Anybody just hear a weird voice? We have ghosts. What's going on, Bob? Anyway. Bob's going to type me. That's all right, Bob. It happens to the best of us. Bob was surfing and some stupid website had auto-playing audio. One of the top five. Never do's when building a website. Never have audio play straight away. I build websites. You don't do it. It's annoying. It's the fastest way to get someone go, nope, next, I'm out of here. But anyway, back to the subject. The German government has done really, really well. And where have they gotten most of the technology from? Australia. Unfortunately, because Australia hadn't been pushing as hard as they should have for solar power over the past decade, a whole bunch of the talent from the sunniest nation in the world went elsewhere. They went where the money was. When are these market religious freaks going to figure out that doing the right thing makes money? Anyway. But talking about France, Germany, and the UK, but all three countries are at best half as far along the road as they should be, a statement announcing the study said. The scorecard was compiled by Ecofys, a Dutch consulting company, and commissioned by the World Wildlife Fund and insurer Allianz. Now, see, the insurance companies have copped on to global warming because they're the ones that pay for the storm damage. And they're calculating all this global warming stuff in. You know, I have problems with the insurance industry, but however, their whole business is based on calculating risk. And they're seeing the risk. Right? But anyway. Joachim Faber, an Allianz board member who helped compile the scorecards, said a global emissions trading market is important to fighting climate change and that the EU should lead its development. The EU-specific trading system we have at the moment must serve as a model system for one that we can found outside the EU for the world economy, he said. The study criticized low energy efficiency in the U.S., but said there was hope in legislation under consideration by Congress and initiatives led by non-government groups. The study also analyzed but did not rank five of the world's fastest-growing economies, Brazil, China, India, Mexico, and South Africa. These countries cannot be measured with the same ruler as industrialized countries, the statement said. And I totally agree. You know, carbon emissions are a long-term thing. And so, you know, the majority of the carbon that we're dealing with now was put there by the developed world. So the developed world has to take the first step. Hey, we're going to go to the phones. Our good friend Susan is on the line. How you going, Susan? Welcome to the program.
Hi there, John. I just had a
comment. How you doing, sweetheart?
melting. Spread a warm air. It's not supposed to be. It's supposed to rain all the time here. yeah, it's kind of tied into the Kennedys. You know, let's face it, if any family's paid in blood, it's them. But also, it ties into that discussion of patriotism that Bob played on the horn section.
Yeah.
you know, the that one idiot was saying, putting your life in danger.
I mean, the statements were just completely ridiculous, you know, as though.
Okay, but there's a way we can make hay out of this.
Okay, shoot.
Think about how we lost Jack Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, all to an assassin, and John Lennon, all to an assassin.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Barack Obama knows, without a doubt, every time he goes out to make an appearance, he might stop a bullet.
No doubt about that.
Now, if that's not putting your life on the line, what is?
Susan,
you're
brilliant.
Stop a man who's willing to die.
You're brilliant. You're brilliant. You've just taken that guy's words and crammed them right back down his throat.
Well, I prefer up his rear, but you know what? You know, I'm not picky.
That's where it can escape at the end of the run. But I think you've nailed it, and it wasn't even something that I had thought about, because it is, you know, I'm having my qualms with his, you know, centrist moves and whatnot. But I'm putting that all down to just calculated, this is how it always goes, and there's going to be shifts as we move along, and I'm just not judging yet, and I've joined that, you know, FISA group at his, you know, My Obama website and whatnot.
Did you hear
I haven't had a chance to read it. Is he making the stand that he's going to challenge this?
Okay, what he's saying is he's going to do the best he can, but he's going to have to do what he has to do. But he also says, if you've got a beef with me, I want to hear about it. Shut up.
Yeah, see, this is the one thing that this is why I refuse to have knee-jerk reactions on things. Because I've already watched him develop things where I do get the impression that he listens and that he is...
He listened and he answered, and that impressed the hell out of me.
Yeah, and you know, the idea that, you know, I've said this before, I get tired of saying, you know, we have to elect leaders. No, I want to elect representatives first, people that actually represent my views. And so I think that's a sign that maybe there's a chance of that. That he actually listens and will adjust his platform to the people that are generally supporting him. And I think I think it could be a really good thing, and I'm willing to step back. I will criticize to the hilt.
Oh yeah.
But I'm not gonna go all, oh, I'm voting for Bob Barr.
Well, he came out and he said, here is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna do what I have to do. I hope you will vote for me. But if you can't, I'll understand. But I'll continue to try and change it.
You know, he's giving more than anyone I've seen in a while. You know, aside from you know, people that we of course dig. You know, Kucinich and Edwards, but they didn't get the chance, and we've gone through all the reasons why that all happened. So you know, it is that time to just. We've got our guy now. We got to get behind him. Yeah, but it's not so much fall in line. I like the idea that they set up the feedback system on the web, saying, we want to hear from you. And I take that as being... Oh, yeah, it was huge. It's the largest group on the entire site by a long shot. I saw the link for it at I guess it was Crooks and Liars the other day, and I didn't even finish reading, you know, the blurb on Crooks and Liars, and it was like, click, yeah, I'm over there.
Whenever somebody questions this man's patriotism, the man is literally taking his life in his hands. I watched Bobby Kennedy die. I watched Jack's funeral. I watched Martin Luther King's funeral. I have seen more death. I've seen too damn much of it. The man, you cannot fault his bravery. No. He's got to be a patriot. Because otherwise he wouldn't be standing out there fully expecting somebody to try and kill him.
Yeah, it truly is my gut fear that some loon is going to take a shot and we're going to end up with another bogus lone gunman story.
I sincerely hope that they have him wearing body armor. I really do.
I'm saying,
you can't stop somebody who is willing to die. You can only kill him.
You got that right.
You know, in return. Yeah. But that just proves that the man is the ultimate patriot because he knows. He knows. He's not some kumbaya, pie in the sky, everything will be all right type. He knows.
Oh, yeah. He's a very clued in individual. He's smart as hell. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, he's definitely not, you know, even though the right keeps trying to say, you know, the most liberal senator in the Senate, which is such a complete load of crap.
Tell that to
you know, it's just... Barney Frank would be going, I take that as an insult. You know, I mean, it's just the nonsense. But I'm glad that, you know... At least you're seeing a bit of a two-way street, and I think what you've said about, you know, the fact that every time the fact that he's running for president as a non-white guy and has gotten as far as he has puts the crosshairs on him immediately.
Yeah.
And you know he understands that. And hence why I reckon part of that whole discussion that he had with his family that, like, we do this once.
I'm surprised Michelle let him do it at all.
I don't know. I'm not sure I could. Yeah, see, I think that is another sign of great patriotism, the fact that, you know, they made the decision as a family that they would subject themselves to what is going to come at them, and they're going to have to fight it. But, you know, I was speaking, you know, when Bob was on his hiatus and we had Agnes in the horn section, I talked about that whole thing. When I look at Michelle and Barack Obama, I see people that more represent my family, myself and Gail, than the Republicans do. And I love the fact that it seems to be a 50-50 relationship.
Yeah.
They're intellectual equals. They are, you know, there isn't this standing behind thing. And I really think that is going to... Yeah, and I do... I have this gut feeling that that is going to resonate with an entire generation or two.
Yeah.
Especially with all the new voters that they've registered saying, you know, this McCain guy and his multi-squillionaire, you know, beer baron wife, they have no clue to what I'm about. Okay, this Barack Obama guy only just entered the Millionaires Club. He was, what, worth about $300,000 when he first got into the Senate? This guy actually has a connection to where I would be, where you are in this world. And I think that, you know, you can go issue by issue by issue by issue, but it all ends up coming down to a sense when you finally make your decision. And for those people that are swaying between and trying to figure it out, I'm thinking that there's going to be a good portion of people that are going to be like, these folks are more like me.
Yeah.
And I like the way that he treats his missus. You know, it really struck me. And watching Michelle Obama on The View, I watched that whole thing online, and I thought she was brilliant.
Yeah.
And again, it was setting out this, I'm no Stepford Wife. I'm no shrinking violet.
Oh, you mess with Michelle Obama, she's going to take your head off.
You know, I reckon it's kind of similar to that, you know, Bob and Agnes relationship. You know, someone messes with Bob, I wouldn't be so much worried about Bob's retaliation, but I'd be looking for that frying pan coming from Agnes.
Yeah, exactly. Any woman can tell you, just by looking at Michelle Obama, exactly where she's at, she will kill anybody who messes with her man.
Good honor. It also means that she's got, you know, she's got a real solid, you know, concern for her family. And, you know, that should counteract all that family values crap that I'm, you know, family values and working families, two terms that I'm really getting sick of. I want to hear, instead of working families, I want to hear about either workers or citizens or Americans, because, you know, this trying to put everybody into that, you know, it's all about the nuclear family kind of thing. The nuclear family just isn't what it was. It's a different world now. We have relationships that span all kinds of different states and whatnot. It's not this confined thing. So it is a bit of getting with the times. You know, it was one of the nice things about getting Kevin Rudd in here, down here. It was a huge generational change where you actually see a guy looking at things that affect people his age and younger, as opposed to the next generation up and older.
Well, what got me when I was working on the Obama campaign, they had a couple paid staffers come in, one of whom was from Las Vegas, young, 21, and she was African American. And what really struck me was, and what gives me hope, is the whole race thing that has totally screwed up my generation.
Yeah.
She doesn't even see it. It's not there. Same with the sexuality. You know, gay, straight. It's not there. It's not something that, you know, okay, yeah, okay, whatever. What are you having for dinner tonight? You know, it's... That's what they're interested in, is what's to eat. What are you driving?
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's
not something they pay attention to.
Yeah, yeah. We have been going the same direction for so many decades.
And we're finally getting there.
You know, it's got to happen. At some point, you know, even if it's not Barack Obama, all these old bastards are going to end up kicking the bucket.
I was about to say, all the old farts in my generation are going to have to die off first for it to actually take effect. But this girl's generation is what gives me hope, because she didn't see it. It didn't end on her at all.
I also have a lot of hope for the generation that's the one younger than me. I think it's growing up with the world at their door with the internet and whatnot. No matter how much we say that mainstream media has limited people's knowledge and view of the world, those that actually access what's out there get a much better idea of how the rest of the world works. You know, just, you know, my neighbor, you know, he's 25 or 26 years old, and this kid is open to anything musically. And that actually says something to me, you know, when he comes up and says, hey, man, do you have any big band stuff I could have? And I'm just like, you want big band? Right on. No worries. You got big band, you know? And but it's it's actually, to me, a sign of whether or not they're open or whether they take on what's spoon-fed. And yeah. I see a lot of signs from, and I see it here in Australia, you know, just as much as you see the, you know, the consumer follower ones, there are just as many that are kind of questioning what's going on and getting involved. You go to any protest that's here in Australia, and I mean, they span generations, but there's a really large contingent from this, you know, so-called Generation Y. And I sit there and think, all right, that's cool, because these people are coming up after me. You know, and that's a good thing.
And that's the neat thing about the Obama campaign, because they, like, that crowd, that huge crowd in Portland.
Oh!
Yeah, it's just, oh, God, that was incredible. I watched it on television, and they were panning the camera, close-up shots.
Yeah.
And they had little old ladies in their 80s. Then right next to them had to be, assuming that person was related to the Madal, that person had to be their great-great-great-granddaughter. Because they were
right.
In their teens. And everything in between.
Susan, do you wonder if, you know, the older side of those relations, do you think that because they lived through what you were talking about, the loss of, you know, Bobby and Jack Kennedy and Martin Luther King and all that, that they're seeing a moment where history could very well repeat itself, where someone truly new and unique is there and saying, look, we somehow screwed it up the last time, but I'm seeing similar signs again. Come with me. I know that the young kids are getting their parents going, hey, you know, not this McCain bastard. Seriously, if you're concerned about me, Mom, I want the guy that's closer to my age. Thanks, you know. And I think it's a serious issue.
I've seen this before. This is not, you know, as much as Barack wants to deny this, this is not just a political campaign. This is a movement.
Yeah, and you know, I played the audio
way,
from.
Get out of it, because it's going to roll over you.
Well, but the other thing too, though, is a couple of weeks ago, I played that audio from when he went back and had a little powwow with his supporters after getting the nomination. And he was again. It was another one of those examples. He was so frank and about where they were and where they've come from, and he was very clear in saying, you know, now that we have the nomination, it's no longer something that we can try and do. Now that we have the nomination, people are depending on us to deliver what they want. So we no longer have a choice. And from now on, we have to pick up our game. We really have to be spot on, super tight, the whole thing. But it's not about him. It's about everyone.
Yeah. Basically, what I see it as, I see some of Jack in him, I see some of Bobby in him, and I see some of Martin Luther King in him, and then I see Barack in him. And you get this all rolled up in one. And it's not, you know, I've heard critics say that, it's just a personality cult. No.
Yeah.
It's the type of thing where, during his inaugural, Jack Kennedy sent out a call to a nation, and an entire generation of kids said, okay, you told us to pick ourselves up and do something for the country. Here we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we did.
Yeah, it is that, you know, ask not what, you know, that whole ask not what thing, you know, and the people are stepping up to take responsibility for their own country, because we let a few small, you know, individuals kind of run the show for a while. You know, there's a whole lot of people that
are
coming back.
Yeah, and now it's time to do it again. But it's not a cult of personality, because if, say, in the unlikely event that say he turned out to be a demagogue and got into office throughout the Constitution, da-da-da-da-da. No. Turned out to be another Huey Long. The very people who put him into office would bring him down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that is at least one of the things that you can, you know, expect from the Democrats, is they're much more likely to go after their own when they screw up than the other side. I mean,
it would be more of a case of, you have betrayed everything you stood for. You're dead. You know, you are political dead meat. No, you will never be elected to so much as dog catcher again.
And you know, but you know, it's funny you mentioned the dog catcher thing, Susan. I also think that that's one of the crucial things that has made me happy about some of the stands that Obama has taken and signs that he's showing is that fact that when he got the nomination, he did kind of show the DLC the hand and went and embraced Howard Dean and said, you know, the guy with the 50-state plan who said, you know, 4 years ago when I met him down here, when I met him in Sydney, you know, he was saying it, look, if we want to take the country back, we got to start with the local councils. You got to run for everything from dog catcher on up.
Yep.
And it has worked. You cannot deny that, you know, even though Howard Dean was my guy back in 2000, like Kucinich was my guy in this process, when they announced that he was going to chair the Democratic National Committee, I thought to myself, brilliant. Because this guy is smart. He's not super left, which I think in the organizational standpoint is a good thing. He's a really good tactician. And he was a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, that assigns him to a certain moral compass.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why Bill Clinton is so ticked, because he's basically dumped the DLC. Well, the DLC was
who
needed it?
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, it was my major problem with the Clintons, even though I have a generally favorable look on Bill Clinton's presidency. I mean, the country did do better. There are issues that I had, but generally, everybody did a bit better. Yeah, but you know, I have issues, you know, the media cross ownership bill, all that, you know, all that kind of stuff. There I have issues. And that's where that kind of corporatist angle of the DLC really rubs me wrong. And I'm glad that, you know, I think Obama identified that the grassroots really doesn't care for how far the DLC has kind of changed the direction of the party. And I think that that was playing very much to, and not in a cynical way, but playing very much to the grassroots, saying, I get this bit.
Mm-hmm.
I understand this. Because there are even Hillary supporters that said that they didn't care for the DLC's moves.
Yeah.
You know, I might not have been during the campaign, but in previous conversations that you would have with folks like that about the party, the state of politics, even Clinton supporters would, you know, have their complaints about the DLC, because there are things to complain about.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's getting towards the top of the hour. I'd better let you go.
It was great to talk to you, though. It was great to have you for a little while. And you know, I was born, you know, just after all of that history took place. And I so love speaking with people that were there, because it reinforces the impressions that I have of what an effect it had on the nation, and I still don't think we've ever recovered.
No, we haven't. The wounds are still horrendous. They rip open. Well, you know, just Hillary's comment about Bobby was enough to have me in tears for days.
Yeah, that was a really bad move, and I don't even know if she intended it to come out how it came out, but still, so bad.
But, you know, it just rips, there's a scab there that comes off very easily, and I don't think it will ever heal. And same for Jack. you know, I understand exactly what he was, both good and bad. But as far as I'm concerned, the good outweighed a whole lot.
I think you've nailed it, Susan. Great to talk to you. Thanks for being on.
No problem.
You take care of yourself.
Nice
4th of July. Have a great weekend. And that was our good friend Susan from Oregon. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I've always said I actually should have been a teenager in the 60s just because I was such a Beatle freak. And, you know, part of me just wishes I had been able to witness all that, you know, the pain, all that kind of stuff, you know. It's just, yeah. Anyway, what a show. You know, this 4th of July snuck up on me this year. Kind of, you know, I haven't seen Independence Day fireworks for, you know, over a decade now. And, you know, I sometimes wonder how would I, if I was still home, you know, still living in the States, how would I mark Independence Day? I think I'd have to make some sort of statement about how lost the country's become and how off the, you know, well thought out path that the founding fathers had come up with, you know. They were common men, but they wrote for the people as best as, you know, their time in history could. And, you know, as Independence Day comes on, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what kind of T-shirt could you make to wear around on Independence Day to make your point, you know? I still wish it was a free country. Because, you know, I tell you, looking from here, you know, that peace activist, that civil rights activist that I was talking about in the Warren section, you know, detained just because, you know, they treat him like an enemy of the state, and he's a lifelong civil rights activist. So being a civil rights activist makes you an enemy of the United States now. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But anyway, folks, please do not forget Billy Shear's anniversary show on Saturday night. The horn will be all in reruns tomorrow for the holiday. So we'll see you in the chat room online on Saturday night. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing. Thanks to Billy Shears for a wonderful segment today. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. You too can be part of the fight against mountaintop removal. And as we say here on Fox Up, be good, be green. We'll see you next week.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people, we don't apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why.
Do this, don't do that, can't you read the sign? membership card to get inside.